Welcome to the Art Grind Podcast. This is a podcast run by artists for artists where we talk about what it means to be one. I'm Tun Mian, the producer, with our host Dina Brodsky and Marshall Jones. This is being recorded between our many jobs and side hustles. We bring you in-depth investigations into the lives of artists we admire and the stories behind the creative journey. So stay on the grind while we fill your mind.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marshall Jones here with Dina Brodsky. Today, we talked to CJ Hendry, and we decided, gosh, she was great.
Yeah, guys, so she was incredibly charismatic and inspiring and just like really hardworking and a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy listening.
An extraordinarily unconventional way into the art world. And actually, Dina and I wanted to interview her because it's not really part of the corner of the art world we usually brush shoulders with, you know? But boy, it was such an inspirational story about doing it all on your own terms and using tools like social media. Almost had me convinced there for a second that there is some, like, look, you can't, if you can blaze your own trail through that stuff, it's amazing, you know? So.
Well, if someone could convince Marshall, then she's worth listening to. So,
But also an exquisite drawer. The verisimilitude she gets on those things is stunning. I don't know any, or at least few people who get that close, you know.
Thank you, guys, and enjoy listening.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Art Grind Podcast. I'm here with co-host Dina Brodsky and our very special guest today. One of the best represents things as well as anyone out there does, CJ Hendry.
Well, hello. That is a very nice intro. Represents things as well as anyone does. Well, I mean, so bad yourselves.
It's true. And I kind of want to start with where did you develop a passion for that? Because like the minute detail you get on like a plastic bag or leather or something is unparalleled, I'd say. So where did that come from?
That's a good question. It's not something I think about often. So you are asking that question. I really need to like take stock and think about how that came about. In terms of drawing, I just kind of stumbled into being here, I'll be really honest. But in terms of getting into the micro detail, that's all I know how to do. Like I look at some extraordinary abstract artists and they can kind of tell a whole different story in an abstract way. I'm like, that is so cool. I don't know how to do that. All I know is how to like copy a photograph. That is what I do really well. And that's essentially all it is. It's mechanical draftsmanship. I'm probably downplaying it. There's a bit more to it, but that's pretty much it. Like, you're copying what you see.
Actually, CJ, let's go back a little bit. I feel like I feel like we really got into like your life right now. You say you stumbled into all this. How did you stumble into all this? And it's sort of like, was there a direction before that?
Gosh, I'd be lying if I said there was a clear direction. I don't think that's the truth. When I was younger, I went to school, as most people do, went to university. And I think when I left school and started university is where things really started slowly to kind of, you know, break apart. In that I went to university and I wasn't that great at university. And maybe it was because I didn't enjoy what I was doing. I started off studying architecture and I just gradually got worse and worse and fell further and further behind. Then after a couple of years, I kind of decided to make the change and go and study a different degree. And I went to go and study finance, which is hilarious. So accounting and finance. So I went to a different university and started studying that. And I spent a total of 5 years studying accounting and finance on top of my 2 years of architecture. So 7 years of university and I have no degree. That's how useless. Well, not useless. I just had no interest. I was enrolled. There were exams. I like didn't attend or like I came and I didn't study. I was like, dude, I don't want to be here. What am I doing? But I kind of was on that track of you finish school, you go to university, you know, and I was like, well, fuck, I don't know what I'm doing. I was working in a bar and a restaurant and at university. And I was like, well, I'll figure it out. And I never figured it out. And I got to a stage 7 years at university when I was like, fuck, my life is going down a very dark hole of nothingness. And I was about to get kicked out of university because my grades were so bad. And I was like, shit, what do I do? Like, what do I even enjoy doing? What am I doing here? I'm working in a bar. I'm failing at university. Like, this is not the direction I thought my life was going. So I kind of like took stock and I was like, you know what? The thing that just brings me so much joy is drawing. And I was like, this is so strange. But I'm like, there was no goal apart from I just want to draw. And because I kind of was at rock bottom, I use rock bottom very generally. I was still living at home. You know, I had a lot of privileges. But, you know, I was, in terms of career and progression, I wasn't really up to much. And I just thought, you know what, seeing as I'm not up to much, may as well quit my job, may as well drop out of university, and may as well just become like just someone who just sits in my parents' basement and draws, because I just love drawing. It just gave me so much joy. I really, what was it that I enjoyed? I think it was the meditative aspect of drawing. And I'm sure with you guys painting, it's just a very calming, soothing thing to do. And I just enjoyed the process. I enjoyed the draftsmanship. I enjoyed everything associated, just sitting down on my own in complete silence drawing. So that's what I did. I quit my job. I dropped out of university and I gave myself a task and a goal. I was like, I'm going to draw for a whole year and just see what happens. And if I sell a few things, great. If I've got enough money to pay for snacks and my phone bill and my petrol, because those are really important things to me at the time, and they still are, I was like, then I'm good. Off we go. And so I started drawing, and this was in the early days of Instagram. I'm sure you remember those days. This is probably like 10 years ago. I just kind of like posted the photo here and there, didn't think much of it, you know. And when I was sitting down drawing, I was like, well, you know, I'll maybe make 5 drawings and put them in a folio and take them to some galleries and see if anyone will take me. And if they don't, oh, well, I'll go back to working in a bar. And then as I was posting things to Instagram, trying to get these 5 drawings done, then, you know, like, things just started to take off. And that's pretty much what happened, you know. So I just was then just doing drawings. I don't know how else to say it. I just drew and drew and drew. And I only drew in the early days in black and white ink. So I, you know, learned about those particular pens through my days in architecture. And I only drew in black and white, and I only used to draw products, things like shoes and handbags and that type of thing. And now I've progressed and I do a lot of different things. But yeah, in the early days, I just wanted to draw, and that's all I did. Something that I thought was quite funny, which may be relevant or irrelevant. So because I didn't have enough money to just kind of like quit my job, like, you know, in terms of the logistics, I like to understand, well, how can you just quit your job? Like, how does that work logistically? So what I did, I sold my entire wardrobe on eBay. And because I sold my whole wardrobe on eBay, I had a little bit of money to go and buy the really good paper, the really good pens, and then pay for framing. You know what I mean? So I had a little bit of a stockpile of money, you know, to get me through the year. So that allowed me to kind of not work and not go to university, if that makes sense.
Hearing this story, you dropped out of school, living in your parents' basement, selling all your clothes. I could imagine your parents had a few questions for you.
Questions they had. Oh, yeah. And my parents they are two of the most wonderful humans. They are very supportive, but you can also understand where they were coming from. You know, like, this daughter who they thought was going to go and do finance things or architecture things or just a real job, something that looked like a real job, secure and normal. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to drop out. I'm going to draw. And they knew I was good at drawing. But, you know, like, who thinks that your kid's going to make it in the art world, let alone sell their art, let alone sustain themselves? I think they were just like, oh, shit, she's going to live with us forever because she's never going to sell her art. So I'm sure that's what was going through their head. They're like, please don't do this. We don't want you to live here forever. I'm sure that's what was happening.
CG, how old were you at the time? Yeah.
Oh, gosh. How old was I? I must have been... Elsa, help me out. My assistant's sitting there. She knows more about me than I do. How old do you think I was when I started this whole shenanigans? So, yeah, early 20s, so 23, 24.
That's funny. I moved back to my parents at 24 also.
Yeah. Ah, there you go. Interesting.
But then, like, the ability to sort of support myself as an artist took ages, whereas I think it seems to have happened very, very quickly.
there. Yes, it did actually. But you did an MFA, didn't you? Master of Fine Arts. So you were always going to be in the creative / art. I mean, generally, don't know what that looks like. That's different for everyone. But you know what I mean? That was what you were probably going to, that's what you were good at. You know what I mean? Am I right in that assumption?
You know, I did all of like what you're describing, like the sort of the not showing up for exams. And so that was my, you know, and the failing generally.
Yes.
That was like my high school track. And then once I discovered painting, it was just, you know, I was like the best student ever.
Of course. Yeah. Because when you get your groove. Yeah, I get that. It did happen quickly, but I like to describe myself as like quite an intense loner, if I'm going to be perfectly honest. I'm not someone who kind of goes into things half-heartedly. I don't kind of, you know, do things. I'm trying to find the right words here. Yeah, when I try something, I go all in and give it a red hot shot. Like I'm quite tunnel vision. So I'm like, okay, I need to quit my job, drop out of uni, and then draw for a year, see how that goes. And then if that wasn't going to work, I'm like, okay, well, what would be the next thing? And lucky I didn't have to find the next thing. But, you know, I'm sure I would have figured out the next thing, whatever that may have been. But at that stage, I was like, 1 year, 365 days, let's draw, let's see what happens. And so I really went for it. So I didn't kind of sit in my parents' basement and kind of take it half, you know, I didn't casually wake up at midday, do an hour of drawing, go and have coffee with friends. I woke up really early. I drew all day, all through the night. You know, I made it my job because I had nothing else to do. I quit my job so I could just draw because I knew how long they took. Yeah, so I was trying to fast track something that takes a really long time. So, yeah, it did happen quickly, but, you know, it didn't really happen quickly given the hours, you know, that I put into it, if that makes sense. And the intensity at which I went ahead with the plan.
You know how they say, like, it takes 10,000 hours to acquire masteries? Mm, mm, mm. I wonder if you crammed in that entire 10,000 hours.
Yes.
Into, like,
I don't even know how many 10,000 hours that is. Yeah, I would have done that in a year or 6 months. Like, I would have done it in record time because I didn't do anything else. Like I said, I'm a bit of a loner. I'm not someone who gets my energy from being with people. I do get my energy from being alone. So the more time I spent drawing on my own, the more time I wanted to spend drawing on my own. So if you gave me the option of going out and doing something, I was far preferring drawing, you know, and just being able to, you know, make these giant, enormous, stunning drawings, you know, and post them to Instagram. And then there was a slow kind of positive feedback loop that was starting to happen, and then I would, you know, do more drawing, and it was kind of that like snowball effect, you know. I was like, oh well, this is good, and they kind of like boost of confidence, you know, like, people do like it. And then when my first piece sold, I was like, yeah, motherfuckers, let's go, you know what I mean? I was like, this can be real, you know, this could be something. And that's kind of how that started.
So would you say you're self-taught then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How did you, I mean, that's going to be so interesting to listeners to develop that, I don't know, well, I guess for lack of a better word, to develop so well in something on your own. How did you do it besides just the hours? Were there...
I think it's just hours. I think if you look at my very early drawings, and I look at some of my early drawings, and I learned a lot of my skill set with pen. So I was using these black, like, you know, Japanese ink pens with different weights, and I would learn how to scribble. And then I really learned a lot of my skill set with depth. So without color, without masking, you know, accuracy with color, I would just use black and white and learn depth and dark and light. And so I only used black and white for maybe 3 or 4 years. And then after 3 or 4 years, I went and moved into color. So I learned a lot about depth and lighting just through using black ink. And then I went into color. And I've actually found going into color far more challenging because there's tones and colors and this and that. And I love the ease of use of black and white. It was just a tone. It was just, you know, a depth thing without worrying about colors. And yeah. Mm-hmm.
And where were you at the time?
So I was in my parents' basement, and I was in Australia for about 2 years. Maybe three. It wasn't long. And then the boyfriend I was dating at the time, he was like, I want to go and travel, and I want to go and live in another country. I was like, I like you. can I come with you? And he's like, yes, okay. And he's like, I want to go to New York. I'm like, I've never been, but I'd like to come. But selfishly also, I was like, New York seems like a good place to go and do art. You know, like, once again, I'd not been in the art world. I know nothing about the art world. I was like, New York, art, those two words link, don't they? You know, I'm like, oh, I wonder if I could jump on this guy's bandwagon. And so I went with him, and now we're married with two kids, you know. But, you know, so he wanted to go to New York. And I was like, this is great. I want to come. So I kind of did it. And, you know, and we rented an apartment in Tribeca, and that was my studio for a couple of years. And I mean, I'm fast tracking here, studio for about 2 years, and now we've had studios in Greenpoint and Brooklyn ever since. So we've been in New York for almost 8 years now. So we've done most of our time in New York's been in Brooklyn, just because the space is there's more of it. Yeah.
So what was New York like for you coming in? Did you find a good community, or were you still just working on your own and posting?
Working on my own entirely and just posting to Instagram. I'll backtrack a little bit. So when I was in Australia, and this is all by Instagram, there was a guy who owned a blog, and this was when blogs were a thing. And he owned a blog. His name was Bill, and he owned a blog called The Cool Hunter. So I need to mention this, because a lot of this doesn't, people might be listening being like, okay, so you drew, you moved to New York, you sell, like, how does it all work? Like, how are you making money? Like, how does it all work? So in terms of the back end things, so I was drawing. This guy reached out to me on Instagram. His name's Bill. He owned a really big blog and had a really big Instagram account called The Cool Hunter. I don't know where that's at now, but at the time it was way ahead of its game. Millions of followers. The blog, a lot of people were subscribed. He had a huge subscriber base, and he sold things, really expensive things. And he's like, you make great art. I'm thinking of doing, you know, this kind of group art show. He invited a whole heap of artists, and I said, yeah, great, sure. Put a few artworks up. Everyone put a few artworks up, and he figured out really, you know, just through that art show, he kind of told all his database, you know, and there was a lot of interest in my work. And I think from there, he's like, would you like to go into business together? And I said, yes. And we figured out a split. And then very soon after that, I moved to New York. A couple of months after that, I moved to New York with my boyfriend. And so what happened, I was just drawing. I was drawing every day, 7 days a week, bam, 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 huge hours. And he would take care of the back end. He would sell all the work. So I did none of that. I was purely just drawing. I just had to do the work I wanted to make. He would take care of the sales. And because his eyeballs were so vast, almost everything I made sold. So I was in an extraordinary fortunate position that so early on, I fortunately teamed up with someone who had that. He wasn't part of the art world. He wasn't part of gallery system at all. So we were both coming into this knowing nothing. But all his background was very commercial. So he knew how to sell. And I was like, great, let's go. Let's make drawings. So that's how it started in the early days. Yeah.
So interesting. It's like a whole roundabout way into this.
Super roundabout. You know, and I'm still not even in the art world. So all these years, 10 years on from when I very first started, I'm in the art world. I kind of circle around it, but I'm not in it. I'm not with a gallery, you know. So, yeah. Now it all happens, you know, independently.
But, you know, we talk about the art world like it's this mythical beast, right?
It's not so mythical. It's amazing.
Where, like, I don't know, there's got to be, like, you know, this door can open up and let you in. And I've known artists who've been completely kind of obsessed with going through that door, because on the other side of the door is, like, the biggest party and the most interesting people, and, you know,
it's like the Harry Potter thing. It's like we're all muggles until you, you know, enter the Harry Potter world. Yeah, sorry, continue on.
you're talking my language here. I spend more time in that universe than I do in the real world, probably.
And that's fine. That's a great universe to be in.
Do you feel like the art world is like that big party? Because in a way, like, you're making it on your own, or on your own with a person that you met on Instagram. You have a life where you can draw all day long, support yourself, and, like, your projects are really cool. Like, you know, you're not just drawing.
That, like, no,
And you did this completely by yourself without, you know, without a big gallery trying to brand you. Like, do you feel missing out on anything or is that?
No, I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything, but I'm also a big believer in doing whatever works for you. So some artists may, like, that's what they want and that's what they desire and that's maybe what their art speaks to, and I say go for it. I've always been a bit of a loner. I've kind of always done my own thing. But I think the main thing I've done, and this isn't an art-specific thing, this is an anything-specific thing, you kind of jump 2 feet in, this is to anything, and you figure it out. So I'm like, we jumped in, and like, I didn't know I'd be in the position I am in now when I first started. Like every day, every year, you're just like, oh, this is happening. You make decisions. You're like, okay, let's do this, let's do that. So it's like, you never know where you're going to be. You can hope for the best. You know, you're like, I just want to make art. But every year I've kind of grown, very fortunate to have grown and developed just through making decisions along the way. Like, I'm just keeping on working. We stay really busy. I've got a really great team who help support me and help me execute ideas. But I'm not on my own anymore. You know, I'm now in a position where, like, I have a team of 10 to 15, it depends on what's happening, you know, in the year, but 10 to 15 people who, it's like, there's a big operation behind, you know, what's happening. So, yeah, but that's taken many years to get there. It's not like I woke up one day being like, cool, we need 15 people. It's not what happens. You know, like, I started on my own with a business manager, and then I went off on my own. And then now we handle all the sales internally. We handle secondary sales. We do editions, releases, exhibitions. Like, it's everything, but it all happens in-house. Yeah.
Do you still draw as much as you, do you still have time to draw?
Not as much as I used to, but I still am on the drawing table every day. It's a flex. It's like, sometimes I'll be drawing 24/7 for a week, and then sometimes I won't touch drawing for a week, but generally speaking, I've always got my hands in something. Yeah.
How long does one of those big drawings take you?
Ages. Like, I started one maybe 18 months ago and I only finished the other day. Wow. So yeah, a really long time. So I'd be lying if I said I'll work on different pieces at, you know, different times. But yeah, they're becoming increasingly longer and longer to make, given that my attention split between lots of different things.
Your story is so cool. It's like, really kind of went through on your own terms. Like, it's great.
Yeah, truly. And there's so much to it. There's so much I'm probably not even talking about. Like, you know, there's so much to my practice. It's not just the drawing. You know, we're building really big exhibitions every year. You know, the exhibition that happened a couple of months ago was in London. And we renovated a church. And we dropped tons and tons and tons of confetti from the ceiling over the course of 10 days. And it was spectacular and stunning. And thousands and thousands of people attended. You know, and then the last couple of days, like, Elsa was managing the crowds with, like, the team. It turned almost into like a festival riot just for people to try and get into the exhibition. It just was like a groundswell. It just became so, so busy, which is so great, but it was so busy. Like, they weren't even manning a beautiful art show. It got to the stage where they were trying to, like, manage crowd control, which isn't, it's just for people to go and look at your art and your exhibition. And, you know, like, it's pretty cool. I'm very grateful for that.
So is that where you feel like you're moving into more, like, kind of events and happening type stuff, or?
Yes and no. It's funny. I was having a conversation with the team literally yesterday and a bit today. I'm not wanting to get into events. That's not really my goal. It kind of happened by accident that I was creating these kind of immersive, you know, highly touchable exhibitions. Like, the concepts are so big. But that was never the goal. I'm like, I really like to draw. I like to make my work. And I don't want it to become, I think what it's almost become is, a lot of people come to the exhibitions. They don't know who the fuck you are, nor do they care. They come to the exhibition because it's free. They come and take their TikTok video and then they fuck off. You know what I mean? And I'm like, uh-oh, yuck, 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 yuck. That's not what I want. You know, obviously you can't control the type of people that come, but I was like, that's not what I'm trying to build here. So yeah, I'm slowly trying to come up with concepts and bigger storytelling that isn't going to attract that type of audience.
Hmm. Well, one thing I thought that was so cool was that copyright infringement stuff that you
yes,
the red box.
Also happened completely by accident. So about 5 years ago, I decided to do a series, and it was just a series, just a normal series. And I drew Andy Warhol's Polaroids as they were. And then I carried on the series, and then I photographed my drawings. Go with me here. I photographed my drawings, printed them out, crumpled them, re-photographed them, and drew them again. So it was a drawing of a drawing, whatever, whatever. And then I was like, oh, let's, you know, print the drawings onto T-shirts and sell them on my website. I'm like, cool, let's do that. And so we were about to release them online. We got them printed. The packaging was amazing. Like, this is all fun and games. And then we get an email from the Ali Foundation a couple of hours prior to the release. And they're like, just so you know, this is copyright infringement. We're going to sue you if you go ahead with the sale. Like, cease and desist, stop, stop, stop. And I'm like panicking because this is like the first thing bad that's happened. I'm like, oh, what do we do? And so we pulled the release of all these T-shirts. And we're sitting there with hundreds of T-shirts, all with like these tin packaging, like it's just lots of things. And so we're kind of sitting there, and we read the fine print of like the cease and desist. And they were like, you know, you need to dispose of these T-shirts. So I'm like, dispose means throw away, means put them in the trash. I'm like, okay, what if we dispose of them in more of a fun way? You know, so we just like, so I thought, you know what, let's dispose of them around the city. I'll just post the locations to Instagram, and then we won't think anything of it. So we sprayed all these boxes red. We, you know, stenciled on copyright infringement, trash only, just in case someone saw the box, so they know that it's trash, throw it away. And so I'm like, okay, let's just drive around the city. We hired a U-Haul, chuck these boxes in the back, and then just like drove around the city and threw them away. And literally after the third time we dropped a photo, there was like a chase car. I'm like, what's going on? Like, what are these people doing? They're like, we're going to get your box. I'm like, holy shit, what's going on? Very quickly, within the first hour, we started to figure out that like people were like running and trying to get these boxes. In the first year, in the first hour, these boxes were going within a minute. Like, it was insane. And then, so we've done it kind of, so yeah, we dropped 50 boxes over the course of 2 days around New York. And then the next year we did it again because we just had so much fun. But I copyrighted a different artist. I think I did Richard Prince the second year, then Tracy Emin, then Damien Hirst, and then Banksy. And so yeah, just did the same thing. We just like copyrighted an artwork. I drew their artwork, printed them on T-shirts, and then did the same thing and packaged them in boxes and dropped them around the city. And we did them in different cities, in different countries. It was had so much fun.
By the way, Andy Warhol would have gotten such a huge kick out of all of it.
I know. But the whole thing, it wasn't the art that was copied. It's the face thing. What's it called? It's the likeness. So, you know, because it's famous faces, that's the problem. It's not the art itself, if that makes sense. Yeah. So it wasn't Andy Warhol that got into contact. It was the Ali Foundation saying, hey, you haven't got the rights from the Ali Foundation to be able to use his likeness.
Because they're like Polaroids of like Debbie Harry or...
Correct. Like Polaroids of famous people. If these were just Polaroids of a flower, this would not have been an issue. But because they were Polaroids of famous people, that was the issue. Yeah.
And people know about it just through your Instagram, like follow.
Literally, them. Yes.
Wow, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, Dina, you know what it's like. Like, you know, Instagram's a really powerful tool, as is all social media, you know. So
you know, I don't know what it's like because I never trust Instagram to like and in a way it's kind of changed my career, or in some ways it's made my career, right?
Yes, that's
not, like I was like really struggling within the traditional kind of gallery system, right? But on the other hand, I never I'm still always amazed whenever like something from Instagram turns into real life. In a way, it all feels like playing with algorithms until a person from that materializes and you meet a person or you meet a bunch of them in person, or someone sells a painting and then you can, you know, do a real life studio visit.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're all real people still blows my mind.
It's amazing, but like, it's an amazing tool. Everyone uses the tool in different ways, you know, so it's just, I don't know how it's just kind of happened. But it is what it is. Like, I don't know. I think earlier on in the piece, so to backtrack a little bit, when I was working with my manager in those early days, Bill from the Cool Hunter, I knew early on working, well, toward the end of our relationship, it was becoming very commercial and he was just wanting to sell art for art's sake, no storytelling, nothing to it. He just was like, make art, I'll sell it. I'm like, that's not going to sit with me and that's not the artist I want to be. So right from there, I was like, I need to break away and go out on my own in order to build my own identity, tell the stories I want to tell, build my own narrative and do exactly what I want to do. And so I'd always wanted to build bigger storytelling, like, you know, the concepts I wanted to be bigger, you know, building huge installations around my drawings. I don't need to do that, but I love the storytelling so, so, so much. And he was not that interested in doing that. So I thought, you know what, this is a great opportunity for me to part ways. And we parted ways and I went out on my own, which was also really scary because I didn't know about the back end. I didn't know how the selling worked. I just made my drawing. So I had to kind of learn on the fly really quickly, you know, and I didn't know any of my collectors, you know, so I was going in completely blind. And then slowly I started to build the exhibitions I wanted to build on my own, you know, the bigger concepts, the bigger storytelling.
So by the way, just the way you come off, like we've been talking for, I don't know, maybe like 40 minutes, so I might be getting this completely wrong. You come off as completely fearless. Like everything that you've said about it, you know, like about your life so far, most people would have stopped and turned back and turned like onto the safer path, probably about like in 10 different ways. And you're just sort of like, well, I knew I wanted to draw. So I just quit everything and started drawing. I didn't know anything about selling paintings, but then I walked away from the guy that was kind of holding me. Like, are you pretending to be fearless or are you actually fearless?
No, I don't think I'm pretending to be fearless anymore. I think in the early days, I think it's very easy with hindsight and a whole lot of experience to sit in the position I'm in now and speak very confidently because I've had so many failures. You know, I'm very confident knowing that no matter what we do, there'll always be problems. Always, always, always. Huge problem. There's more problems than successes, in my opinion. But because we know and the team and because I'm so much more confident as like a leader and, you know, like I'm so much more confident in my ideas and what I'm able to execute. I know that things are always going to go wrong and you're just like, okay, you know how to deal with it. On to the next. How do we problem solve? So I think like what we're really good at in my practice is like learning what problem solvers. Like I think we're professional problem solvers beyond anything. And then I'm an artist, you know what I mean? So yeah, like building these big exhibitions doesn't come without faults. Are you kidding? But yeah, I think in the early days, I was a little bit nervous. I'm like, oh my God, my anxiety. I was like, oh, I don't know how to, you know, and then I'm just like, shit, all right, let's just do it and figure it out. But it didn't come with a whole lot of anxiety. It came with a lot of anxiety. But now my anxiety is much, much lower than it was because of the amazing amount of experience I've had doing things. You just jump in. I know that we'll figure it out. There's always an answer to everything. You just jump in 2 feet, hope for the fucking best, go in with a goal and a vision of what you want to achieve, knowing that it's not going to be exactly like that, but knowing that it'll come really close and we'll have a lot of hurdles along the way. But never once have we not had something go wrong. And I think only through the failure I think I've got that confidence now.
Honestly, what you're saying is also like really inspiring.
Thank you. That's very sweet. But there's a whole lot of things that I'm not, you know, like, you know, I'm not entirely confident with everything. Like I don't know the answers to a whole lot of things. Now we're jumping into the whole world of like TikTok and then, you know, YouTube's going to be getting into YouTube shorts. And this is for, you know, growing audiences on other platforms. I know nothing about it. I don't even know how to do it. But I'm like, oh, well, fuck it. We'll just jump in and figure it out, you know? It's like I don't know much about anything, but we're just always trying things.
Yeah, but you're also not scared of like the next, you know, to try for like the bigger thing.
I was thinking, though, about like, you know, where you're headed. But right now, if you were to explain your art to someone who'd never seen it, like, someone at a bar. Oh, you're an artist. What do you do? How would you explain your own work?
So I'll answer that question by answering in a slightly different way. Number one, when people ask me what I do, I don't say I'm an artist. I'm like, I do a bit of this and that. And they're like, what does that mean? I'm like, oh, I kind of make art, I kind of do things, we build things. It's kind of like just a whole lot of things. I just say I do stuff. I'm very busy doing things. So just to keep it very vague, and then in explaining my art, I don't think it's particularly easy to do that, given that my art is not so one-dimensional anymore. I think in the early days, I would have been able to say, all right, I do drawings and they look like a photograph. And I can still say that. But now I think my practice has evolved in such a big way. I now create huge installations, huge. That's an artwork on its own. Mm-hmm. And then we create by accident these enormous scavenger hunts, you know what I mean? Completely by accident. And they go viral around the world. We could do that in any country. And, you know, like, I'm just like, so I don't really know how to explain what it is that I do. I think I'm multifaceted across a lot of different areas, and I love all of them. You know, so I can do installations. I do love the practice of drawing because I love the intimacy of drawing. I love thinking on an enormous scale. I love thinking about product. I'm obsessed with packaging and how things are presented and how they look. You know, so there's so many different aspects to what I do now.
If you were given the option to just stay, you know, like stay locked in your studio, paint 12 hours a day, maybe, you know, like, or however long, and then spend time with your kids, right? And just have everyone else sort of like take care of everything else. Would you do it, or would you still? Because it feels like you're coming up with all these ideas. You're the one that's like necessary to make this whole universe, like, you know, it's like the C.J. Hendry universe, like
yeah,
more necessary to make it tick.
That's a really good question. I mean, that's the easiest part of my practice is sitting down to draw. I just sit down and draw. I don't need to think. It's easy. It's the thing that comes the easiest. I can sit down, put on a podcast, put on Netflix. That's the relaxing part of my day. Everything else is a lot more challenging, and I don't think I'm as good at the other things, but I'm getting better. I don't think that my practice would be where it is unless I was involved in everything else, because I'm a big believer in, I know this sounds crazy, but like I'm a big believer in magic and that you can't manufacture magic. And I don't think what I'm doing is magical, but I do think what I'm doing is really unusual and a fuckload of fun. And I don't think I can pass that job on to someone else. I can't be like, make that happen. It wouldn't have the same kind of like quirky flair or the same like tongue-in-cheek element that I give it, because I'm a little bit like a little bit naughty, a little bit tongue-in-cheeky. I'm a bit of a cheeky artist. I'm a bit naughty. I kind of do things not exactly how I'm meant to, and I don't think you can pass that job on to someone else. And that's where, like, you can't manufacture magic. You just got that or you don't. Another way I can explain that, there's a lot of artists, and you know, I'm sure you're the same, who maybe want to follow in your footsteps and they try to replicate what you do. And there's a lot of artists who draw product, and like, you'll look at them and go, oh my God, that, like, the amount of people who send me things like, oh my God, have you seen this? It looks like your work. I'm like, yep, saw it. Yep, got it. And that is very humbling and lovely, but they still aren't doing what I'm doing because they can't manufacture the magic. They're taking my, what's in my head and the things I've built, and they just doing the drawing part. But I'm like, I've built a much bigger story, and there's so much more to the drawings, you know what I mean? And they just doing the drawings and the renderings, I'm like, that's really cool, but it's coming from my head. No one else can do that but me for my practice.
So do you think it's like the art, in a way, all under this big umbrella, like packaging, yep, and installations, do you think the art then is your personality, like who you are?
I really do. I think so. Then, to explain my personality, if you were to look at my drawings, my art's a bit cheeky and a little bit intense. Cheeky and intense is a great, because it's intense, because like, it's so labor intensive, it's so clinical, it's so precise, and that is the type of person I am. I think I'm quite clinical and I'm quite precise and I'm very direct, but I'm also have like a cheeky kind of that pop art element. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like a playful cheekiness, but a very intense playful cheekiness.
Well, to me, yeah, they're playful in just the way that you know how much time it takes and for it to be like, stitching or thread in a patch or something. It's like that took so long to do. And there's something kind of inherently playful just in the time you spent looking at thread, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You had one recently. It's this giant weird flower that is like so beautiful. And but also part of it is thinking like, oh my God, that must have taken like, you know, hundreds of hours. How did she have time to like sleep and breathe? And like, I had no idea you had kids, but like you're taking care of people. How long did that one take? And also what's that flower called? Because I've been curious about it ever since.
I don't actually know which one you're talking about. I don't know which color is, what color is it?
It almost looks like a monster plant.
Oh yes. It's an Australian wild plant. And it was for a commission for an Australian couple. And like I said, those bigger pieces take upward of 18 months. So they've been waiting almost 2 years for that piece. So this was a long time before I had my first baby. I was chatting to that couple on their commission piece. So it was the big ones take a really long time. They're very labor intensive, you know, and like I said, I do a little bit every day, you know, just to get a little bit ahead on each piece that I'm doing. Yeah. So I don't know, like hours wise, upward of 200 plus hours, but it's taken me that long to get done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's also totally, yeah. It's a totally stunning drawing.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Yeah.
So back to what you were saying earlier, but because there are a bunch of kind of CJ Hendry wannabes on the internet, make the kind of drawings that you're known for. Jenna, when you see those people, is it flattering or upsetting?
No, it's not upsetting at all for me personally, because I am very much of the opinion if people are being creative and they're drawing and if I'm their reference, then that is absolutely fine. Like I would never take on an artist to be like, you're copying. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. I'm so busy and so focused on the next thing. By the time they've made the art that I made 3, 5, 6, 10 years ago, I'm already thinking of the new things. I don't have the energy or the time or the interest to take anyone else down. Not my focus. My focus is my art, my practice. And if people are doing art because of what they've seen, they obviously like what I do. So I'm very grateful for that. And then go ahead and make it. You know, it really doesn't bother me so much.
I'm generally actually kind of thrilled whenever like sometimes people will send me the stuff being like, oh, I copied
your
thing. And you know, and it will be like a school kid or a college kid.
Yeah.
Oh my God, like someone like
yes.
enough to copy it that like,
yes.
So to me, it almost feels like an honor, but then I've also known artists who get very upset about.
No, you know. Dina, I'm like you. I find an honor. I find it just amazing that like I said, I'm not meant to be here. So I'm just amazed that people are even copying what I'm doing. I'm like, bless your heart. Keep doing, you know, like, why not? But no, I'm very grateful to be in this position. And the fact that people even know my art, like, you know, what more can you ask for? Like, that's the goal at the end of the day. Like, I'm of the opinion artists are so unnecessary in the world. I know other people may not think that, but I'm like, at least I'm trying to do a good job and people are getting inspired in a small way. I'm like, there you go. That's all you need.
Well, and like you said, like you can't copy your personality, you know, like that is something that is, you can't really make a facsimile of it. So whatever comes out of you comes from that machinery that seems to be quite, you know, appreciated and recognized.
Mm. Mm. Like I'm always going to be one step ahead of what they're copying, you know, so it really doesn't bother me. And I'm already like thinking of other things and busy doing other things. And my interest is not to take down other people because they being creative and drawing and practicing and getting better at their craft. That's good for them. You know, they're putting in time, they're learning to draw, and that's really important.
I kind of want to ask you about, you said it magic. Are you like, I just sort of to get where you're coming from. Do you mean actually like this is magic, like in that way of that we think of magic, or are you saying it's like, how do you believe in magic? I guess is my question.
I believe in magic in a whole lot of fucking hard work. That's number one. But I think people have magic in their own right. Everyone's got a little bit of magic. Everyone's doing their own thing in their own amazing way. You know, like there might be people who can play the piano like no one's business. There are people who can rote learn and memorize a book or whatever it is. Everyone's got their little thing. My particular quirk is like I'm very highly, highly creative. I just can't get my ideas out quick enough. in my opinion, a true creative. I'm not really good on the back end. When I have to write an email, there's 100 spelling mistakes. I send it to the wrong person. Like, you know what I mean? So like, I'm very grateful that I've got a really great teammate who's really good at that. She's an accountant. She's got that, you know, those are her strengths. That's her magic. Her magic is in a different format. My magic is in, you know, the bigger picture thinking and the create the storytelling and the ability to think of things in an unusual way. Yeah, I don't know. That's my magic. It's not real magic, but for me, it's something different. And yeah.
You know, arguably it is real magic. So because
sure, that's true.
Because I spend a lot of time in like Harry Potter universe.
Yes.
And my kids spend a lot of time, like I think a lot of the conversations in our house are like, yeah. Like them trying to cast spells on each other and then me yelling, you know, no dark magic in this household. That's an unforgivable
curse. Oh, that's so funny.
The other day, one of, you know, there's a little one, like he was like, you know, does magic exist in the real world or are we all like muggles? And I was like, no, we're not all muggles. Magic does exist, but not as in like you can wave a wand and something.
Yeah.
But you can come up with something, like come up with just in your head and then work really, really hard to make that idea for like go from your head to, you know, real.
Yes.
That is, it could be a painting. Yeah. It could be like a particularly, I don't know, impressive spreadsheet. I don't know what happens in accounting, but the fact that you can just like, just by working and coming up with something turns up, you know, like turns up didn't exist into something it does. Yes. Amazing.
And like I said, everyone, and so magic is not about being able to make art that looks like a photograph. That's not it. Everyone's got their own little magical thing that they're really, really good at. It just so happens what I'm really good at is being able to, visually do things. I'm like, I don't have a sketchbook where I'm writing down ideas and what is it going to look like? I don't even do that. It's all here. And I'm just like, boom, this is it. Let's go. You know, so I'm quite clear in the way it needs to be done. But there's no sketchbooks. There's no like, you know, I just kind of can look at something and go, okay, great, let's do it this way. You know, so that's my little magic thing. Everyone's got something. I do believe that. Everyone's got a little bit of something.
So the question is how, so I'm assuming your personality was actually, you know, like the same thing that made you was the same at, you know, 19, 20, 21, et cetera. I cannot see you being an accountant for like 5 seconds.
I think what I was, and I spoke to mum about this and she laughs. I was always a very intense child. So she tells a story where like when I was at school, like must have been primary school, like everyone was learning to do a cartwheel or a roly-poly or something. And, you know, like kids would try and they like couldn't do it. And then off they go and play and do something else. Like the teacher kind of pulled my mum aside. She's like, your kid just kept going and going and practicing and practicing and going again and again until she got it. And that is really who I am. Like I'm relentless in that I'll keep going and keep pushing and keep going until we get there, you know what I mean, and kind of almost to the point of whatever it takes. Now I'm a little bit more relaxed in that approach given that I've got other things going on in my life, but the overall vision is still very big, very grand and relentless in a way. So I'm creative but very focused on doing
I wonder, I mean, so that anecdote more or less like it does come up your personality, like where you'll just do the cartwheel over and over again and be busy in the process, but by the end of that you'll know how to do the cartwheel.
And I think that's set me in good stead for, you know, for example, building these enormous exhibitions, like renovating a church in London, a heritage listed church, in order to do the exhibition. You know, it was an unused church and we transformed it into this spectacular space for this exhibition. It was truly breathtaking, you know, and like that doesn't come with its own set of challenges and resources and all the rest of it, but you know, like we got to the vision eventually. We got there. You know, we had to postpone the exhibition because of COVID, so the church sat there, whatever, the story, it goes on and on and on. But yeah, it's like, you know, nothing, like I'm so focused on creating the visual, I'll do whatever it takes to get there.
So how did that idea, you know, kind of manifest itself? Did you wake up one morning and was like, you know what I really need? Like I need to renovate a church in London. Where did that start?
No, that's so generally speaking, it's super strange. The concepts always start with drawings. So I'd always been fascinated by the concept of flowers, but I'd seen a lot of people kind of draw or paint flowers, like as you would expect, flowers, bush, pretty, colorful, nice, let's go. And that didn't interest me so much. I was like, well, how can we talk about flowers and the beauty of that, but in a more sinister way? And so then I was thinking about flowers are alive and colorful. I'm like, well, can we talk about it in the form of death? And so I'm like, death, church. I'm like quite a logical thinker, I think. And I was like, okay, death, how about falling petals? You know, the death of a flower is when a petal, you know, when a flower falls apart and the petals fall down. And then, you know, the concept building, right, there were lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of iterations, but we ended on, you know, tons and tons and tons of, you know, custom cut flower petals that were going to fall from the ceiling over the course of 10 days in this stunning, stunning church. So that's what the exhibition was. It wasn't as easy. Like I said, lots of iterations before we came to that idea, but it always starts with the drawings and an idea that I'm really interested in.
Do you have a certain piece so far in your career that feels like would be the piece you'd want to be remembered by?
Honestly, not particularly. I don't get super attached to any particular piece. I look at my practice as a whole. That sounds so vague. But I do lots of drawings which I'm attached to at the time, and then I move on, and then I'm obsessed with other ideas. So I'd say at every point in every single piece I make, I don't make them unless I'm obsessed with the concept or the idea. So I'm really into that thing, and then it's made, and then I can relax and be like, oh, I'm done with that, and then on to the next thing, you know? Hmm. Yeah.
How has it been different now that you're getting larger and larger in scale and you have employees and stuff? How does it feel different from just being in the basement drawing to what it is now? What are things you like better and less, you know?
That's a really good question. There's a lot I like more in that I'm able to execute the ideas because I have the support of other people who are better at other things than I am. But the thing that I'm not really good at yet, which I'm getting better at, is like managing people and, you know, managing my ideas and help, you know, before I would do everything myself. And now in order to grow and scale and to be able to execute the ideas I want to execute, you know, I have to sit down and talk through those ideas and entrust those ideas with other people to make sure it gets done correctly. You know, so it's managing people is not something I'm really good at, but learning to get better at, if that makes sense. But that was, I didn't get into this wanting to do that, but right. Now I have to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's kind of where the question came from. Yeah. It was like, you had a love of drawing and that, and it's brought you into these very exciting new places where it feels like there's more managing, less drawing, and it just feels like you're, you know, as we move through, expectations and what we thought it would be change, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And but that's also the reality of it. Like I didn't have a big vision knowing that it would be a small little, you know, backyard garage operation. Like that's not what I knew I was getting into. I knew the scale of what I wanted to achieve and what I, you know, still a long way to go. But you know, you learn, you pick up little bits as you go. Like I'm learning, you know, different skill sets, and I'm getting better at them. And yeah, I'm becoming more of a rounded human being, if that makes any sense as well. I think I was very one-dimensional before, very, very intense, could just do the one thing. Now I'm slowly expanding my skill set.
So we moved out of the basement. Your parents, we had questions about that. Now, what do they say now? They got to be like, holy shit, she's got like all these employees.
Oh, they never say holy shit. They're very normal, you know, wonderful people. And I think they're just really proud, which I'm grateful for. They're really proud, very supportive. They always come to the exhibitions. I mean, they would love to come. They would love us to come back to Australia right now so they can be with the kids and that type of thing. But they know we've got a job to do. You know, they know we're busy working. So we'll go back. We'll get back there eventually. But they're really proud, and I'm grateful for all their help and support in the early years. You know, I think a lot of those early years are very formative. You know, Mum gave up so much of her time, like taking my sister and I to back and forth to school, to swimming training, to everything else, all the other extracurricular sports we did when we were young. you know, yeah.
Were you always drawing as a kid?
No, I was swimming. I was a swimmer. I was not really drawing. I didn't actually spend much time drawing as a kid. I liked doing it. I was good at it, but didn't spend any time doing it. I was relatively sporty, not particularly academic, bless my heart, not very smart, but loved to swim. And then eventually went to love of drawing.
So where do you see yourself? It's getting bigger and bigger. Is it like looking at museum stuff or art fairs? Where do you see yourself heading?
That's a really good question. I'm not particularly interested in art fairs because for me that art fairs are pure commercial. There's no storytelling in that. There's no creativity. It's just about moving art and making money, which is absolutely fine. That's a huge part of the art world, but that's not my practice. You know, everything I make has a story and there's a bigger concept, and I really enjoy doing that. And if I just put my art in an art fair, it's like, well, like what am I meant to do there? And then museums and galleries, yeah, maybe eventually, but I'm just going to keep doing my thing because I'm really enjoying doing it. I don't know.
Yeah. By the way, you know what the real magic feels like? Is that 10 years ago you were failing accounting school, and then a year later you were, you know, drawing in your parents' basement without, ever really having drawn before. And now you kind of get to tell these huge stories the way that you want to, and you made all of this happen in very much on your own terms. You didn't have to go through a system which would sort of grind you up, spit you out to whatever you're meant to be in order to be a successful artist. You just became one by yourself, and truly magical.
But you know what? I was listening to a podcast you guys did a couple of podcasts ago. I can't remember who you were talking to, but you were saying, Dina, that you are very grateful for social media and what it's allowed for you. And I think, Marshall, you kind of said you wanted to kind of go back to what it was. And, you know, what the art world, what the world was before. And I'm like, unfortunately, we can't change what's happening. And, Dina, I'm probably a bit like you. I'm really grateful for all the opportunities I've got from social media. But at the same time, everyone's had social media for the same amount of time. So everyone can do what we've done, if that makes any sense. But it also takes a lot of work to do that. You know what I mean? So I'd also, people are like, oh my God, but you've just done it through social media. I'm like, just done it through social media. You know what I mean? It takes a lot of effort and energy to be in that position. Does that make sense?
So the social media thing, it was, part of it was maybe luck. Part of it was some amount of work, some amount of
Time. Yeah.
I feel like it would have been, and Marshall, I get you, I don't like what it's, no one likes what social media is doing to all of our attention span.
Yeah.
The hoops that we would have had to jump through in order.
Yes, I agree.
Sell our work, et cetera. That would have been much more work than just post a little video. And
I agree. So I'm really grateful for the social media gods, for that opportunity. Because I wouldn't be able to sit here and be in this position and build these things unless they're, because if I went through the gallery system, I still probably wouldn't be in a gallery, and I'd be creating these exhibitions for no one because no one would even know that it's on. Do you know what I mean? So social media is quite amazing in that way.
And you'd have to rely on someone else. You'd have to trust the gallery entirely to take care of you financially and creatively, you have to do all of these things. And I'm not sure that, galleries, they also have a business to run. They're not it's not their job to help us live our dream. It's their job to, try to pay the rent on their gallery, which, can help pay our rent. Whereas just do it, you decided what you want to be, and then you just made it happen.
And I think that's almost anyone on social media story. You can be anyone you want to be, you just need to go ahead and do it. It sounds so simple, but I think it can be possible for anyone, to be honest.
Well, I think, we always do kind of go back and forth about this, but when I hear your story, it is exciting to me. It's a very exciting story where someone who had talent and does have something to say and bring forth, it finds an alternate route that I think is much better than the gallery system. You know what I'm saying? What you've done is all on basically your own terms, and now you're employing people, which is a service. It's just like such a cool thing to hear about it and know that it's growing and all that, you know. Mm-hmm. So that does change my mind a little bit on social media. I mean, there's, I see a lot of outside.
There's a place for all galleries. There's a place for all artists. It just depends on what you want to do, you know. Like, galleries will always have a place in this world, you know, and they're still doing great things. So are art fairs. It just depends on what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just for the record, like, until pretty recently, maybe the last year, I'm much less ambitious than you, by the way, just even scale-wise. Like, I paint very small things. Like, even a year ago, if someone gave me an option to just have, like, a really good gallery that just allows me to paint, and then they do the business side, I would have been like, bring it on. Just, you know, like, that, like, I don't want control of this part of I just want to paint. And now I've kind of realized, like, I do want to paint, but also I like the control, and like, I like
you're probably really good at it, you know, like, good on you. That's pretty amazing. It's a great realization to come to.
I mean, it took a really long time. Like, it took a really long time of thinking that I'm actually, like, sort of like underachieving, like other people are finding ways within the system, and I'm not. Yeah. And now I'm like, no, I like being able to sort of create your own, you know, like create your own system a little bit.
Good for you. Well done. That's a great position to be in.
And with you, you just took that onto this, like, literally a massive scale, like the.
Yeah, and I'm very great. I'm grateful, and I don't know what the next steps are, but I really enjoy building things and creating concepts and allowing people to walk through that concept and experience that concept. I really, really, really enjoy that, like, a lot.
You know how, like, a little earlier you said, I'm not even supposed to be here. Do you feel that way now, or did you feel that way when it first started out? And you sort of, because it feels like you're comfortable enough in the, like, it, you know, it doesn't feel like you have an imposter syndrome, like you're supposed to be here.
No, I'm definitely I'm supposed to be here, but, you know, like, definitely at the beginning I'm like, I don't even have a degree, like, I don't even know how to draw, like, what am I, you know, and there's a lot of things I do in this practice that I shouldn't be doing and I don't know much about. But yeah, it's one of those kind of prime examples of, you just figure it out, like, you just jump in and, you know, just like, this is what I want to do, how do we do that, there's going to be 100,000 paths to get there, but you just like, oh well, let's give it a go. I think that's my motto, is just like, give it a go, because if you don't know, if you don't go you'll never know. That's stupid saying, I know, that's so boring, but yeah, we just jump in and we always try things. They don't always work, we come unstuck a lot, like. Yeah,
but I think it's like, the means that you got there is one thing, but it's like, just talking to you and Dina, you're quite similar, just smart people who are tenacious and have, like, all those ingredients. Like, if you're building, I don't know, a video game character and you get to put all these points into them, it's like, with you both, points are dispersed in a nice way that will sort of, you guys will kind of get through anything. You know what I'm saying? You've got enough grit, you've got enough talent, you've got enough sort of fortitude. When something knocks you down, you're not going to quit. Like, those are, whether social media exists or a gallery or whatever, those are the things that are, in my mind, the recipes.
God, Marshall, you are good for people's confidence. I'll tell you what, you're very, very kind. Very kind words. Very generous with your words there, young man. That's very kind. And yeah, I agree. Dina as well. I think we're very lucky to be in the position we're in, you know? And yeah, this has been a really lovely, easy breezy conversation. So thank you to both of you.
Well, thanks for coming on.
You know, so one last question for CJ. What's your current project? Or if you're allowed to talk.
Of course I can talk about it. I'm a pretty open book. I'm not too secretive with it. I've been working on a commission piece. It's a big Mickey Mouse, doing that. There's a few little commission pieces that I've been working on for over a year that I'm finishing off. And then we're working on the exhibition. So I do one big exhibition a year. I'm working on, we're busy figuring, we're in the very early elementary stages of figuring that out. And we'll be in New York, and it's happening in New York, and it's all around, like, just trash. I'm not giving much away there, but yeah. Just all around trash, yeah. But in a tongue-in-cheek way, it'll be a bit funny, a bit cheeky, a bit, yeah.
Is that like sort of the plastic bag stuff that I saw?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And will we be able to go to this?
Yes, most certainly. Yeah.
Okay. I'm in New York every few weeks. I would
I would love to have you guys. Okay. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Marshall, will that get you out of your cave, the painting cave?
I'll come out of the painting cave to go to
Where's your painting cave located, Marshall? Where are you at?
It's in Hell's Kitchen. And I just
What's that area like? You like it?
I love it. I mean,
yeah.
It's grittier than it was.
What?
Yeah, it's sort of like a post-pandemic kind of changed a little bit, but yeah, like I love it. Yeah.
That's so good to hear.
And you're in Greenpoint? I used to know
pretty well. Yeah, Greenpoint. Also quite gritty. Greenpoint definitely has its grittier parts, definitely. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Is it West Street? Are you on West Street there with all the
We're very close to West. Very close to West Street. Yeah. Yeah.
God, thank you so much for doing this, by the way. Like,
thank you both of you. I really appreciate your time, and yeah, keep up the great podcast. I'm now a listener and a fan, so thank you so much. Appreciate it. Well, I got lots of hours to crunch while I'm drawing, so
thank you.
Well, thank you very much both for having me. I appreciate it.
Good luck.
Great to meet you.
All right, bye. See ya.
Bye. Good luck.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you got some good painting done while we entertain you with our amazing guest. If you like what you're hearing, follow and subscribe to our podcast if you haven't done so yet. And if you're so inclined, rate us whether you love or hate us. We love hearing all the different opinions and appreciate the feedback. You can reach out to us at artgrindpodcast@gmail.com or DM us on IG at artgrindpodcast. You faithful listeners have the power to help us grow. So please spread the word. It's free, and you'll feel good about it. So until next time, stay on the grind while we fill your mind.